6:55, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting the Democratic Party nominated former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton as its 2016 presidential nominee, making her the first woman ever to become a major U.S. political party standard bearer in the race for the White House. Afterwards, her husband, former President Bill Clinton, called for her a dynamic force for change.
There are clear, achievable, affordable responses to our challenges. But we won't get to them if America makes the wrong choice in this election. That's why you should elect her. And you should elect her because she'll never quit when the going gets tough. She'll never quit on you.
Mr. Clinton said she's uniquely qualified to seize opportunities and reduce risks the country faces, referring to her as the best darn change maker he has ever known. Clinton is to face Republican nominee and New York businessman Donald Trump in the November election. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has replaced his deputy and opposition rival Riek Machar, who fled the capital Juba following renewed clashes by rival forces. Mr. Kiir appointed Taban Dungay, the rebel chief negotiator, during last year's peace talks. The UN warned the South Sudanese leader any appointment must be consistent with the peace deal. Elizabeth Trudeau is a U.S. spokesperson.
There were provisions within the peace agreement on this. The government, writ large, both SPLM in government as well as in opposition, remains in dialogue. We see that the president has issued a decree on this. Mm-hmm. The United States stands with the people of South Sudan. We will work with the government of South Sudan. In terms of this and whether it's allowed under the peace agreement, it's going to be a question for the leadership of South Sudan.
Meanwhile, tens of thousands of South Sudanese have fled neighboring Uganda in the last 2 weeks. This is VOA News. Islamic State claimed two of its soldiers carried out Tuesday's attack on a Catholic church in Normandy, France, where they killed a priest after taking him hostage at knife point. Both attackers killed later by police.
Face à cette menace, qui n'a jamais été aussi
French grand, President François Hollande, who visited the scene of the attack, vowed absolute determinism in the fight against terrorism in the face of what he called this threat, which has never been greater in France and Europe. French security officials said the two attackers slit the throat of 84-year-old priest Jacques Hamel before police were able to intervene. The latest killing comes less than 2 weeks after a Tunisian mowed down 84 people with a truck in the southern French coastal city Nice. German authorities said that a patient shot dead a doctor and then killed himself at a Berlin University hospital Tuesday. Police said there's no indication at this time it was an act of terrorism. A series of attacks has rocked southern Germany in the past week. A Syrian asylum seeker blew himself up outside a music festival, wounding 15 people in Ansbach Sunday. Another asylum seeker attacked and wounded four passengers on a train and a passerby in Würzburg July 18th. Islamic State claimed responsibility for both attacks. Friday, 9 people were killed in a shooting center shooting spree in Munich by an 18-year-old German-Iranian with a history of psychological problems. A Syrian refugee also killed a 45-year-old Polish woman with a knife Sunday in the southwest city of Rutlingen. The UN envoy to Syria, Stefan de Mistura, says he hopes peace talks to end more than 5 years of conflict can resume late next month. He spoke after meeting U.S. and Russian officials in Geneva, who hope to reach agreement next month on military and intelligence sharing cooperation.
Our aim, and let me say it very clearly, is to proceed with a third round of intra-Syrian talks towards the end of August.
Meanwhile, reports indicate pro-government forces seized a rebel neighborhood in the northern city Aleppo, tightening their grip on the siege of a city seen as vital to both sides. The UN Security Council has voted unanimously to extend its peacekeeping mandate in Central African Republic until November next year, weeks after France announced it's ending its mission. It also expressed support for new President Faustin Archange Touadéra, but urged him to foster reconciliation between the Muslim and Christian communities. Malian forces arrested a regional leader of the Islamist group Ansar Dine in connection with last week's attack on an army camp that killed 17 soldiers and wounded dozens near the central town of Pala. U.S. stocks were mixed in Tuesday trading as investors await corporate earnings reports and a policy-making meeting of the U.S. Central Bank on the future course of a key interest rate. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barthe in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. History was made last night at the Democratic Party Convention in Philadelphia.
Madam Chair, I move that all votes cast by delegates, be reflected in the official record. And I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the nominee of the Democratic Party for President of the United States.
For Senator Bernie Sanders nominating Hillary Clinton by acclamation, VOA's Vincent Mankori will join us to talk about this amazing movement. We'll also talk with a Zimbabwe political leader who is attending the Democratic Party convention. And South Sudan's new first vice president promises to work with President Salva Kiir.
The country cannot have two armies. I will move with you very fast to finish the integration and unification of our forces.
Taban Dengai is South Sudan's new first vice president, speaking yesterday after being sworn in. A Liberian opposition presidential candidate denies he's being courted to be Vice President Joseph Boakai's running mate in 2017. Displaced Abuja natives demand their rights, and climate change is causing more intense heat waves. Those stories, plus our listener of the week, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Last night was a history-making night at the Democratic Party convention in the U.S. city of Philadelphia, when former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was officially nominated as the party's 2016 presidential candidate, making her the first woman ever to become a major U.S. political party standard bearer. Clinton will formally accept the nomination tomorrow, Thursday. Joining us again from Philadelphia is VOA's Vincent Mankori. Good morning to you, Vincent.
Good morning, James.
Thank you very much again, Vincent, for joining us. What was the mood in the convention hall when Hillary Clinton finally broke through this glass ceiling?
Electrical, unexplainable. I mean, it was like unbelievable. You could see it in the faces of the people, in the sounds and voices in the arena. History has been made in the United States, which has been a long time coming. And what a mood it was. Celebratory, and I think it's going to last for a long time.
Of course, Senator Bernie Sanders was also very gracious watching it on television in a spirit of party unity.
Indeed, Bernie Sanders has been doing a lot actually behind the scenes than even what you've seen happening on the television screen, because his supporters who passionately love this man, I've spoken to so many of them, were on the verge of a revolt. I mean, they did not even want to listen to him tell them that they should support Hillary Clinton, because they believe in him, they love him, and they feel he has been treated unfairly. But he has been very gracious. He has acknowledged that there were things that happened that were not fair to him. But he's been very gracious to go around and tell his supporters, let's put all that behind us. Let us endorse Hillary Clinton. And please vote for Hillary Clinton so that Donald Trump does not become president of the United States.
What do you think people around the world, or Africa particularly, what do you think, what lessons do you think can be drawn from what has taken place here, the political history that was made at the Democratic Party convention?
Indeed, a big, big, big lesson here. First, for the first time, America can morally talk about promoting women to positions of leadership. It has been teaching the world about democracy, equality, equity. But for the first time now, America can also go around the world, can go to Africa and say, yes, you should promote your women to positions of leadership. And we know that Africa has taken the lead. Liberia has a female president, was the first one to have a woman president. We have seen countries like Rwanda, where over 50% of representatives of the citizens, members of parliament, are women. We've seen a big increase even in countries like Uganda. So Africa has made a lot of progress in this area. So for the first time now, the United States can have that moral standing with the first, at least, we don't know if she's going to win the election, but she has gotten to the point of being the nominee for the first time of a major political party in the United States to run for president. It is something that Africa can now comfortably look into and, of course, learn, especially from the political process, because we know she's not inheriting some position. She's not becoming, a nominee just because there was a tribal conglomeration of some groups to make sure she gets there. It is a very intricate, really open political system that has gotten her there.
Secretary of State Clinton's husband and former President Bill Clinton also addressed the convention. What did he have to say?
You know, for him, his task was to help people understand what he really knows about this woman. She is his wife, of course, but he wanted everybody to understand that he knows her as this powerful woman, this change maker, this resilient woman, and especially a woman who has so much compassion for other human beings, who has for years fought for the expansion of healthcare to many people. She has fought for people who suffer from disabilities, in that she's not only a compassionate person, but a really strong fighter when it comes to social justice causes. So he was doing his best to make sure that people understand that this is not just his wife, but it is a woman he admires greatly, and he would like other people, American voters, to embrace her in the same way and to show that by electing a president, and they will never regret if they cast a vote for her.
Vincent, we thank you very much again, as usual, for joining us, and thank you very much for the good coverage.
It's a delight. Thank you.
That's VS Vincent McCourty at the Democratic Party Convention in Philadelphia. The leader of the opposition People's Democratic Party of Zimbabwe says he's happy to witness democracy on display at the U.S. Democratic Party National Convention in Philadelphia. Tendai Biti, who is attending the convention, says it was refreshing to see Democrats disagreeing on some issues but yet remaining united, something he says people can be killed for in Zimbabwe and elsewhere in Africa.
I believe that I'm the only Zimbabwean from home attending this convention. Yesterday evening was electric, hearing the powerful speeches from the First Lady Michelle Obama, Senator Bernie Sanders, Mrs. Elizabeth Warren, and others was just electrifying. So it's very humbling to be here.
As the president of People's Democratic Party, what have you learned from attending last night's convention for you and your organization?
I think the key issue here is that democracy is a painful thing. It is a process. And in Africa, we haven't found it. In yesterday's meeting, there were two opposing groups, those that support Bernie Sanders and those that supported Hillary Clinton. They were able to clap hands together, sometimes boo each other. But at the end of the day, it was quite clear, particularly from the statement and speech by Bernie Sanders, that the Democratic Party will stand behind Hillary Clinton. In Africa, that process would have seen, and certainly in Zimbabwe, the death of individuals, the destruction of homes, the destruction of villages. So it's a process. It's a learning process. Democracy is still elusive on the African continent, but it has no substitute. It has no alternative. And I think that's the big lesson.
From what you have told us, is there any resemblance in terms of what is happening at the convention and what you have been going through in Zimbabwe?
That's the point. The likes of Robert Mugabe and ZANU-PF and his terrible wife, there's no room for discussions like this at home. Right now, as I'm talking to you right now, the regime is finding and looking for means and ways of keeping the opposition inside jail. Linda Masarira right now has just been denied bail. So it's predatory politics. It's a rogue politics. And we've got a long way to go before we can understand that it's a democratic right to be different, and that in diversity there is strength. So the likes of Robert Mugabe and others need to find reflection and introspection. And perhaps they need to be invited to some of these platforms so that they can see that the world has moved far ahead of them, and that the world doesn't care a hoot about little big people whose function is to exploit and repress and oppress their people.
That was Tendai Biti of the People's Democratic Party of Zimbabwe speaking from Philadelphia with reporter Kionez Sojani of VOA Zimbabwe program. Today's Wednesday, July 27th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. In Liberia, The leader of the opposition Liberty Party says he's not being quoted by Vice President Joseph Boakai as a possible vice presidential running mate in the 2017 presidential election. Mr. Boakai was this month nominated by the ruling Unity Party to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Charles Bramskin, who competed and lost the last two presidential elections, says he and other opposition parties look forward to changing the leadership of Liberia from the Unity Party to an opposition party, hopefully his party. Bramskin said he's willing to work with other parties to come up with a united ticket against the ruling party.
We are running for the presidency. As you know, this is our third time. We believe that this time around, three will be the charm. And we look pretty good with the voters, with President Sirleaf not on the ballot again, the lady who had caused me trouble two times around. I think we can win easily this time.
You say with President Sirleaf not on the ballot again, but we hear that the vice president is going to be running, and there's also this rumor that you might be running on the same ticket as the vice president?
There is no way that as an opposition politician, we will be associated with the ruling party in the 2017 elections. It simply is a rumor, and it is, as it has been in the past, the tactics of the Unity Party trying to distract the voters from the real issues. The issue here is replacing the Unity Party, as we have learned in our country. Once a political party stays in power too long, Liberians begin to feel like there is no way to change the government through the ballot box, and trouble comes into our country. Let me make it very clear, unequivocally clear, we're not associated with the ruling party. We're not going to run on the same ticket. We look forward to changing leadership from the ruling party to an opposition party, hopefully led by the Liberty Party.
But do you have any in your mind that somewhere along the line that you might join with other political parties other than the ruling party?
Yes, certainly. We hope very much that we will be able to build an opposition coalition to oppose the ruling party. You know, this is Africa. This is Liberia. But I guess anywhere in the world, the ruling party has an advantage. So in order for us to offset that advantage, we should not have 20 opposition political parties running. When we had our special convention in Lofa, Vanjima, a year ago, that brought me back into the limelight as political leader of Liberty Party, I put forth an olive branch to all opposition politicians. I said to them, let us follow the example of Nigeria, the Federal Republic of Nigeria, and let us get together, sit in a room for Liberty Party. Everything is on the table. Let's discuss it. I'm prepared to walk out of that table, not having my personal goals accomplished, as long as we come out with a ticket that the Liberian people will respect, will vote for, to ensure that Unity Party does not perpetuate itself in office.
I was interested just to get your own views on the Global Witness report and all the other angles that is brought on.
One, in my position, has to be careful not to appear to be politicizing the Global Witness report. My suggestion, however, would be that the fight against corruption does not stop with the Global Witness report. Because as you know, corruption deprived the average Liberian of the schools they should have for their children. It affects the average Liberian. So we must all join in the fight against corruption and make sure that we move this country to a different level.
Charles Bramskin is leader of the opposition Liberty Party of Liberia. He spoke with me in Monrovia during my recent trip to Liberia. The indigenous people of the land where Nigeria's capital, Abuja, is situated were displaced 40 years ago to make way for Nigeria's first planned city. Today, those people and their descendants say they have been marginalized and, for the first time, they are threatening violence. Chika Udua visited an indigenous community and sent this report.
In 1976, Nigeria's military ruler declared the capital would move from Lagos to Abuja. With the fastest growth rate in Africa, Lagos was becoming overcrowded and difficult to manage. Abuja was a quiet and obscure place in central Nigeria. It was known as a no man's land, but there were thousands of people living there, belonging to about 9 different ethnic groups with different languages. When construction of the new capital began, many were forced off their lands by the Nigerian government or pressured to sell to private citizens and businesses. Today, many Nigerians still believe there were no people in the Federal Capital Territory, the FCT, before it was created.
Somebody asks you, where are you from? You say, from FCT. Say, FCT, no man's land. It's disgusting. So where do I come from?
Dr. Sani Yahaya's ancestors lived in the land occupied by the capital. Yahaya has joined a campaign to demand the government stop taking the land that belonged to their forefathers.
Why can someone be struggling for what it is? It baffles me. This is your food. Why are you struggling for the food? Give us our food. We're not asking for much. We're asking for what belongs to us. Give us what belongs to us.
Abuja is a sprawling landscape with million-dollar homes, multi-story office buildings, and miles of wide roads. But as the city continues to expand, the original occupants of the land are being displaced and forced into slums with bad roads and poor services.
We continue to comply, even at the expense of our ancestral land, even at the expense of the poverty that our people have continued to suffer over the years.
Yunusa Yusuf is the spokesperson for the Coalition of FCT Indigenous Group, an association of the 9 tribes that claim Abuja as their ancestral home. Among coalition demands is that Abuja be given more political power. The Federal Capital Territory has only 1 senator and 2 representatives in parliament, numbers far out of line with the territory's population. The coalition also wants a governor, which is disallowed by the constitution. In June, Yusuf made a surprising declaration to the federal government.
We, the indigenous people of FCT, are not cowards. We can as well decide to carry arms, if that will be the only remedy for us to be dialogued with.
In 2014, the Nigerian government demolished some homes belonging to Abuja natives. The community protested, blocking a major highway for 6 hours. Yunusa was arrested and detained in prison for more than a month. Yunusa and other indigenous people accused the Nigerian government of trying to silence them. On paper, the indigenous people of Abuja no longer own the land, but in their hearts, Abuja is still their homeland. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir Tuesday swore in Taban Deng Gai as the country's first vice president, replacing Riek Machar, whose whereabouts are unknown since he fled Juba 2 weeks ago after fighting broke out between Machar's forces and those loyal to the president. Taban says his main priorities are to end the fighting, allow IDPs to safely return home, and to merge the 2 armies into one. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
Viva! 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 SPLM in opposition and SPLM officials upload their respective movements minutes before President Kiir swears in Taban Deng Gai as the nation's first vice president at a ceremony in the presidential palace known as J1. Chief Justice Chan Rech Madut administered the oath of office to Deng 1 day after President Kiir issued an order to replace Machar, who has been in hiding since earlier July, shortly after the fighting erupted in Juba. After his swearing in, Deng wiped away tears as he vowed to work with President Kiir in merging the SPLM-IO and SPLM armies into one.
I will work with all of you, Your Excellency the President. We must cooperate with the international community, provided that they respect this country as a constitution, this country as a president, and have a law to be followed. As I said, you are my commander-in-chief. The country cannot have 2 armies. I will move with you very fast to finish the integration and unification of our forces.
Deng says his other priorities are to improve humanitarian and economic conditions. President Salva Kiir says he will cooperate with the SPLM-IO leadership to end the country's conflict, and he welcomed Deng's decision to cooperate with the international community. He acknowledged the role played by the UN peacekeepers in South Sudan, but added that he does not see any need to deploy more foreign troops in the country. The UN and the African Union have proposed to deploy regional troops in the country to keep the peace. President Kiir strongly opposes that move.
To any other forces that are inside Juba, all the UN agencies are free in South Sudan. Behaviors of individuals, yes, do not be counted on the government, because they are everywhere in the world. Not everybody that can follow whatever is said by the government. So let us go back to the drawing board and we start to implement this agreement, and so that we don't disappoint all the friends that have been already disappointed.
Vice President James Wanyika says Taban's appointment to replace Machar is legal under Article 6, Subsection 4 of the IGAD brokered peace. The article states that in the event that the post of the first vice president falls vacant for any reason, the replacement shall be nominated by the top leadership of the SPLMIO, which shall not exceed 48 hours. President Kiir has tasked the SPLMIO leadership to write to the stakeholders of the August Peace Accord about the current changes in the country. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
The World Meteorological Organization says evidence is growing that links more intense and more frequent heat waves to climate change. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Heat waves that have gripped large parts of the Middle East and central and eastern United States since last week have reached temperatures far exceeding the seasonal averages. The World Meteorological Organization says the blistering 54 degrees Celsius reached Thursday at Mitraba, Kuwait, is probably the highest ever reached in the Eastern Hemisphere and Asia. The hottest temperature ever recorded was in Furnace Creek, Death Valley, California, at 56.7 degrees Celsius on July 10, 1913. While temperatures elsewhere in the United States have not reached those heights, WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says they have soared to 38 degrees Celsius.
And that's the actual temperatures. Once you factor in humidity and how it actually feels to you as a person, the temperatures are even higher. So we're talking about 43 to 46 degrees.
Nullis says a unique feature of the U.S. heat wave and that of many others is that the temperatures do not drop much at night. She says this offers little relief from the oppressive heat and can pose serious health risks, especially to the elderly.
Over the past 50 years, hot days, hot nights, and heat waves have become more frequent. We expect them to become more frequent still as this century progresses. And this is obviously due to climate change.
The World Meteorological Organization conducted a study last year which found that many extreme events over the past 5 years were a result of climate change. In the case of heat waves, the agency says they increased by a factor of 10 or more. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Two Al-Shabaab car bombs exploded outside the main entrance of Mogadishu's airport early Tuesday during morning rush hour, killing at least 13 people. Somalia's security officials said Al-Shabaab, Somalia's Al-Qaeda-linked terror organization, claimed responsibility for the attack on the group's Andalus radio station. Seven of the 13 people killed were UN guards, the security officials said. The entrance targeted in the bombing is regularly used by employees who work at the airport and is located near the UN and African Union buildings that connect to the airport. And that's it for this Wednesday, July 27 edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Next time on Street Talk Africa, Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Democratic National Convention and what a Hillary Clinton presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Street Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.